It's the Dry Heat Check with Jay Cohen Espo, Greg Esposito, that's him, I'm Jared Cohen. It's episode Jim McMahon, episode number 9. Jim McMahon wore the Arizona Cardinals red and white back in 1994 after winning a Super Bowl in 85 with the Chicago Bears. He was at the back end of his career with the Arizona Cardinals.
It was the very tail end. And when you say he wore the red and white of the Cardinals, that was literally all that was on their jersey back then.
It was
very, very plain. I bet you all thought we were going to go with Dan Marley for this one.
Yeah, I know there's people that are going to be upset with us that we didn't roll with Thunder Dan. But hey, we're for unique and different and obscure. That's your word of the month, obscure.
If we had gone with Dan Marley, it would have been Dan Marley for that last season he was here, not Thunder Dan or the one that went to the finals. You weren't getting good Dan Marley if we went with it. So we went with Jim McMahon. Deal with it. All right?
And we talked about him a little bit last week. That was my obscure athlete when you put me on the spot. You told the awesome story of when you saw him at a movie theater wearing those famous sunglasses.
In the theater with the lights off.
I have a story. So my parents have been season ticket holders for the Cardinals since they've been here. And they have their Cardinals charity dinner that they have each and every year. They still do that. And the season ticket holders can go, and it's pretty neat, especially being a kid, being around a bunch of professional athletes. I remember Frank Sanders went around with a football and asked for kids' autographs, and I signed my autograph on a football for Frank Sanders.
That's in his trophy case at home.
Right? Oh, yeah, and my name is highlighted, I'm sure. So the funny story is, when I was a kid, I have a lot of Chicago blood in my family and big Chicago Bears fans, and the Bears were obviously great when I was a baby and growing up. Jim McMahon, I used to call him Chicken Man. My nickname for him when I was a toddler was Chicken Man because I couldn't say Jim McMahon. So my dad, at one of these charity dinners in 1994, goes up to Jim McMahon with me, introduces me to him, and tells him that I used to call him Chicken Man. And Jim McMahon proceeds to say, "You must be talking about my legs." It was amazing. I actually remember that to this day. That was a long time ago, but that's my Jim McMahon story of when he was in the Cardinals uniform.
I'm disappointed. I thought you were going to tell me he taught you the Super Bowl shuffle, and this would be the greatest story ever told on Dry Heat.
We did the dance together, right? Yeah, that would have been the Super Bowl shuffle. That would have been pretty legit. How about other notables who wore the number 9? You mentioned Dan Marley, the only son to wear the number 9. He is retired. The number 9 will never be worn again, and rightfully so.
And I'm wearing the 95 All-Star socks
which
that we talked
about
that Dan Marley played in that game.
Those are sweet socks. You have to take a picture of those and
put them on
the at Dry Heat Check Twitter handle today. We mentioned Jim McMahon of the Cardinals. There's also Dave Zastadil, who I was leaning towards putting the Aussie punter as the guy we were going to name this show after.
I would have been okay with it, but I feel like Jim McMahon kind of represents everything that this show is about. Potentially, you know, somebody that had talent or that's already way past it or hasn't reached it yet. That kind of is how we are. I don't know which one of us hasn't reached it
yet. A good segue would be another Cardinal that wore the number 9 is Matt Barkley, who hasn't reached it yet and might not ever in a Cardinals uniform. So there's that. Diamondbacks, Matt Williams, Scott Hairston, Gerardo Parra, Tuffy Gosiewicz. It's funny, Gerardo Parra and Tuffy Gosiewicz have now been mentioned two straight weeks because two times they've had to move from having the number 9 back to the number 8. We mentioned them last week because of Matt Williams' presence on the Diamondbacks roster, on the coaching staff, I should say.
You mentioned Scott Hairston. I got a quick Scott Hairston story for you. I was working in media relations on radio for the Tucson Sidewinders back in the mid-2000s. I was part of... It was part of when I was down in college at Tucson. Scott Hairston was down there. I think he was rehabbing an injury with the Sidewinders. I'm in the parking lot getting ready to go into work, and I find a wallet in the parking lot, and it's a Louis Vuitton wallet.
You know, so it's not your wallet.
This is nice. This is not you know. This is not the kind of wallet that the groundskeeper dropped. So I open it up to see who it was. And right there is Scott Harrison's MLB player card. I didn't know that they actually gave you an actual, like, basically ID card to prove that you're a Major League Baseball player.
Sorry to interrupt you, but they do that in the NFL, too, I know. And working in Old Town Scottsdale out of college, I'd get guys that would flash me that instead of their ID, basically saying as, allow me in and have three drinks ready for me, and whoever I want to bring in can come in with me.
Yeah,
that's what those cards are really for, not to to say, hey, I play in major leagues. It's for get me in this bar and give me bottle service.
Oh, I was first, that caught me off guard. So I was like, okay, it's Scott Harrison's wallet. And there's like, I swear, $600-$700 in cash, just 20s in this bad boy. It's thick. So I take it in. I give it to the clubhouse attendant. He's like, oh, I'll let Scott know that you're the one that gave it. I'm sure he'll hook up you with a bat or something. I'm still waiting to hear from Scott Harrison to this day for returning his wallet. So
and
Scott,
now you know why episode 9 was not named after Scott Harrison.
So if you're out there, Scott, I'm still waiting. At this point, I'll take the cash rather than the autographed items, though.
And then finally with the Arizona Coyotes, Sam Gagner, who was with the team for a couple years most recently, wore the number 9.
Which, damn Canadian name. It's spelled G-A-G-N-E-R,
Gagner.
And it's Gagner.
If he was from, Chicago, he'd say Sam Gagner.
Yeah, Boston, it'd be Gagner.
Gagner.
Yeah, so... But yeah, that always drives me nuts with the Canadian names. But let's move on.
Let's move on. Now, topic number one. Well, let's get over all of our topics. We're going to talk Cards Camp, which, sorry to burst the bubble there. That's what's coming up next. The airing of grievances, and Espo actually requested to just do a full episode of airing of grievances. But I've held him back to a top two. So you're getting the best of the best of all the things that are bothering Greg Esposito this
week.
Which
means my first grievance is yelling at you for not allowing me to have an entire show of my grievances.
Well, you know, it's not all about you, Greg. It's not all about
you.
Okay,
it's not.
Trade, extend, release. We're bringing that back this week. And
this
gonna
one's going to be fun.
It's going to be a little dicey. We're going to be a little dicey. Diamondbacks related at that. But let's get into topic number one, which is Cards Camp. And you can't help but notice every time you look around Twitter or the front page of stories... All this Cardinals hype, it's the cover of Sports Illustrated. But now people are predicting or seeing them slipping in power rankings, Espo. They've gotten blown out in two preseason games, games that have seen barely any starters play any significant action, yet they are slipping in the polls. What the heck is going on here?
Who takes the third game of the preseason as Bull Marcel Shipp, all right? Who takes the third game of the preseason like that? Well, I do, and the Cardinals should too, because none of this matters. We talked about it last week. This preseason does not matter at all for the Arizona Cardinals. Let's make it very clear. All they have to do is get out without Carson Palmer being injured and probably Larry Fitzgerald, and they're all right.
And Larry Fitzgerald is kind of hurt right now with that strained MCL
but
nothing major.
As long as they don't have some kind of season-ending injury to a main player, it's a successful preseason. It doesn't matter what's going on. And I found it kind of funny that Bruce Arians has decided to take back play calling this week, which he had said, oh, nope, I'm not going to do it at all this preseason. He's taking it back for the third game. I don't know if he's feeling... a little stress that the offense doesn't look good, but it doesn't matter. Week one's when it really matters against New England. And how do you fall in the power rankings? Power rankings are total crap anyways. It's basically...
Hey, the Cardinals in a lot of power rankings I saw last year were ranked number one. They ended up third or fourth last year.
This isn't anything. This isn't like the old college football where the rankings at the end of the year determine who the champion is. So that's not the case. And let me let everybody in on a little secret, having worked on the inside. And don't tell everybody here at Sports 360 AZ that I'm giving you the secret to the internet. But these things are all about page clicks.
Yes.
There's nothing. They're going to tell you.
I knew it.
They're going to tell you things just to get you to click on it, to get you to read it. So the Cardinals slipping in the power rankings is solely because somebody over at whatever website it is needs page views. So they're going to get you to click by doing that. It's clickbait. Power rankings don't matter. I'm sorry.
Especially
I ruined the NFL for you.
It's over, Espo. I can't watch any more football for the whole season now that the power rankings have been ruined for me.
And honestly, if that power ranking isn't coming from somebody that is a legitimate insider, I really, really couldn't give a crap.
And even if it was coming from a legitimate insider, I probably wouldn't care either.
No, it means nothing. Now, sometimes the insight into what's going on with the team in a week in the description is interesting. But when we're in preseason and we're talking about, oh no, the Cardinals are ranked second best in somebody's power ranking instead of first, who cares? It does not matter one bit. And what happens on the field doesn't matter one bit in the next 2 weeks. Yeah. It's just not – I'm not worried about this offense. Are we really concerned that Carson Palmer forgot how to play quarterback, that David Johnson doesn't know how to run, that the defense has all of a sudden forgotten how to get pressure at all? No, none of these things are happening. You play vanilla base offense and defense in these games, and basically it's a glorified workout. Mm-hmm. So if you're really sitting there getting stressed about this, please get more important things in your life. Like, enjoy the preseason for what it is. Glean what you can from it, from what you're watching.
And enjoy that you're living in the United States of America, where power rankings are at the front of news stories, I guess,
yeah,
right?
The fact that you have the freedom
to read them at your own free will.
Now, if you want power rankings of greatest teams in the past, those kind of things are fun.
Yeah, those are fun.
But, like, none of this matters. Unless Roger Goodell really goes on a power trip and goes, you know what, college football 15, 20 years ago was really good, where these writers voting on things determined who the champion was, and let's get rid of this playoff thing. Until then, forget about power.
Yeah, and until then, we've seen how that actually ended up for college football, that they've completely gone away with that.
Yeah.
So it actually hasn't worked out. You're totally, totally 100% right on the outlook of the preseason. You still can learn about this team through watching the preseason.
Yes.
And that's what I intend to talk about now, is we have watched two pretty horrific football games against two teams playing in a division that really is not supposed to be a very good division this year. Not the worst by any means. I think the Raiders are going to be improved. I think the Chargers will be improved compared to where they were last year. And I think the Chiefs are a playoff team again, and the Broncos are the defending Super Bowl champs. So I don't want to sit here and say it's the worst division in football, but it's also not the best division in football. And these are two teams that are supposed to be maybe in the middle of that pack.
Yeah.
So you still can learn some things from this. And I'm wondering, what have you learned from the Cardinals through two preseason games, maybe from an individual standpoint or from a collective group standpoint, that is concerning, that is uplifting? There's not a lot of uplifting things that have come from two blowouts, but what has stood out other than them slipping in the power rankings?
The defensive backfield is still a concern, but we haven't seen Marcel Shipp.
Now,
why do I have him on the brain.
Can't wait for episode 31, right?
We have not seen Tyrann Mathieu on the field yet in a preseason game. We have not seen Justin Bethel on the field in a preseason game.
Mike Jenkins.
Yeah, I'm not going to get overly concerned about that, but that stood out so far. There's been a learning curve in the defensive backfield. Alex Okafor, the injury to him, mm-hmm. and the fact that he's not undergoing surgery and he's going to play through it.
It's intense.
To me, says how much this team, these players realize that this is a potentially special team, and you don't want to miss out on being part of it.
Mm-hmm.
That screamed a lot to me, and how much they want to play for Bruce Arians and how this could be a once-in-a-lifetime kind of opportunity with this crew. So that said a lot to me, more than the injury itself. And when we all thought he was going to be out for the year, I wasn't too concerned. But the fact that he's going to forego surgery, potentially put himself through, you know, what will amount to potentially 20 weeks of immense pain, excruciating pain, he's going to do it because he sees something extremely special here.
I'm glad you brought up the defensive line, because with all the negative chatter around the team, you can't help but notice this defensive line. Even as you get into the third quarter of these preseason games, just the names that they're throwing out there and the production that they're going to get. You know, everyone's talked about how this is one of the deepest, if not the deepest, positions on the field. It's one thing to say it and list it on paper, but to watch it on the field, when you think about Calais, Chandler Jones looks phenomenal,
yes,
by
does.
The way, and Marcus Golden. Love those three. But then you throw in Corey Peters, who I feel like is a forgotten man because he missed that whole season last year with the Achilles injury. He's going to be great for this team. You have Rodney Gunter, who is one of the best stories of the 2015 season, being a rookie out of Delaware State that has seemingly come out of nowhere. You have Kareem Martin, a former, I think it was a second-round pick, third-round pick, who they expect to be very productive. You mentioned Alex Okafor, who can be a very productive player if he can play through this injury. You have Robert Kamdichi, who's coming back from an ankle injury. And you list all of these names of guys that could easily be starters in a 3-4 defensive scheme because these could be top three defensive line players on a lot of other rosters in this league. And they just keep shuffling these guys in and out. And Calais Campbell said something interesting. I don't know if it was after that preseason game or early this week during practice, that having to be able to shuffle guys in and out, you know, kind of platooning, if you will really make this team fresh come playoff time if they could stay healthy. You don't have to have the same 3-4 guys out there every down. You can rotate 7, 8, and even 9, which is crazy to think about, 9 guys that could really keep you fresh and really give you an opportunity to have a pass rush like we saw from the Denver Broncos, which basically was the catalyst to them steamrolling through the playoffs.
And honestly, I don't care if two teams in the AFC West have a better second or third team group of players out there, because that's what we've basically seen. We haven't seen a huge amount of playing time for the first team offense and defense for the Cardinals in these preseason games. If we see these problems continue into game one on Sunday night against the New England Patriots, and Jimmy Garoppolo decides that he's going to look like the second coming of Tom Brady in that game, then I'm worried. Outside of that, I don't care. I don't care if they get housed, you know, 56-0 on Sunday against Houston. I just don't care that much.
Now, Houston has some local storylines. Brock Osweiler, yep. He shunned the Broncos, got his money, got paid by Houston. Jalen Strong, former ASU wide receiver, is on this Houston team. Is there some intrigue with this Texans team, kind of with the local ties that they have and that they're going to be bringing?
I'm sure a little bit, just like Bercovici playing
in San Diego last week
against the Cardinals. Yeah, there's the Brock Osweiler effect, where people just around the NFL are interested. Is he actually going to be able to be that quarterback that the Houston Texans have been searching for since the inception of their franchise? They've been almost as much of a revolving door at quarterback as the Cleveland Browns have over these years. So you've got to wonder, can he bring it? Will he live up to that contract? Or was he a guy that what we've seen it a million times in the NFL, where a backup gets a chance for a short period of time during the regular season for a team, then gets vastly overpaid in free agency and never amounts to anything?
I'm going to pose something to you. We mentioned and talked a little bit briefly a couple weeks ago about Jerron Brown, mm-hmm. who has been probably the MVP of training camp to this point. You know, maybe he's taken advantage of time with John Brown, not to be confused with Jerron Brown, being out with a concussion that it sounds like there are still lingering effects of that, which is hopefully he doesn't play another down this preseason if he's dealing with concussions. You got Larry Fitzgerald in and out with the knee. So there's been opportunities for him to be a top three receiver in 5 receiver sets in different situations. Do they have something here with him? Is this the type of thing where they can just say, this could be our guy for the future, and when we lose Fitz and possibly lose Michael Floyd, is this someone that they can groom? Do you see star potential in a guy like this?
Look, Bruce Arians called him basically the MVP of the best receiver of camp and preseason so far. And to me, that's basically like being called the skinniest kid at fat camp. It really doesn't matter, all right? It's great to have a good training camp. It's great to have a solid preseason. But if he doesn't show it in the regular season and opportunities he gets, it's not going to matter. And I know that seems to be the theme right now with this Cardinal stuff, but some guys are really good when it doesn't really count. And they can look really good. And we've seen that over the years with the Cardinals. There have been plenty of preseason all-stars, if you will. But when the bright lights turn on, some guys can't handle it. Some guys can't perform. They just can't come up big. And Jerron Brown, if you're going to put the faith that he may be a guy to be able to do that into the future, you need to see it from him in the regular season.
Yeah, well, he had a couple games last year, mainly in Seattle down the stretch, where he made some big catches and he stepped up in some other games. But consistently, you're right.
And,
absolutely.
And he's got potential. That's great. But there's a lot of guys on this roster with potential. Michael Floyd has had a great deal of potential since being drafted from the NFL. He's been inconsistent. You know, Smoke, John Brown, has shown flashes. J.J. Nelson has shown flashes. It's great, but it's time to live up to that potential week in and week out, because Larry Fitzgerald isn't long for this roster. They need that guy to emerge that's going to be the star of that group, and we've yet to see it. We've seen flashes from all of them, but none of them have consistently done it, and one of them has to do that this year. Could it be Jerron Brown? Sure. But I'm not ready to say, yes, he's a guy you want to look at building that receiving core around moving forward yet.
That's
not prepared.
That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. It's the Dry Heat Check episode, Jim McMahon, episode number 9. The airing of grievances, Espo. So I'm prepared to give you the floor here. I know it might get some flames might be thrown here. He texted me this morning. Can we just have a whole episode of airing of grievances? And I, being the level-headed one, I guess, clearly here, I've limited you to 2. So, without further ado, Mr. Greg Esposito in this week's airing of grievances.
I'm going to go 2.5.
2? Wow.
One's going
to
be a personal.
So now you are undermining me on air. You're doing this on purpose to try to make me look like the jerk of the group. That's nice. Thank you.
I am. And the first one is personal to me. The last 2 months of pregnancy is the longest. I know people talk about how long it is to wait for Cardinal season or sun season to come back.
No.
Wait until your wife's pregnant and those final 2 months of
especially
pregnancy.
With the first one.
It already feels like it's been a decade that she's been pregnant. Like, and and now this final 2 months is moving slower than Oliver Miller in a 100-yard dash. All right? And I'm talking Oliver Miller back in the day. I'm not even talking now. But it's slow.
Yes.
I just want, like, I'm appreciating pregnancy and the miracle of this whole thing. But God, I want to get to the end of it and actually meet this kid that has put me through emergency room visits and a million other things.
And it's supposedly going to change your life, right?
Yeah, everybody keeps telling that. I'm waiting for it.
My first kid was a week late. So on top of the full pregnancy, there was the week of it could happen at any moment. Remember, because this is a Christmas baby, so we got invited to Christmas parties, and all of them were prefaced as, well, due date's around then, so we'll tentatively say yes, but if we're not there, you'll probably know why.
Well, and my child is already on the WNBA side of the growth chart, so I'm guessing she's not going to be late, but God, it's a long time. So that's the personal one.
Is that the half one?
That's the half
one. Okay, all right.
If you're still listening, thank you for letting me air that out. I don't get to therapy anymore, so this is my therapy session every week.
We're here for you.
So let's get into one of my meaty airing of grievances. Today is August 24th, also abbreviated today as 8/24 in shorthand. L.A. has declared it Kobe Bryant Day. All right? I've got a few problems with this. And obviously
sure
it's biased because I'm an Arizona sports fan, and Kobe Bryant it just makes my skin crawl from a professional athlete standpoint. But it brings up a bigger problem for me. Why are we celebrating a guy who was accused of rape and giving him his own day in a city? Aren't there more important people that you should honor with a day than an athlete? And I don't think we should be doing this for athletes in general. All right? Why? Like, unless they had a major impact on the city by doing philanthropic work, donating money, getting into the community and doing things to have an impact, or that they did something completely selfless like a Pat Tillman, why are we giving an athlete a day? Kobe Bryant was a selfish guy who his teammates didn't like. We already had to deal with a year of this fake celebration in his retirement tour where everybody, including your Phoenix Suns, decided to kiss his ass and show him, like, act like he was some god in basketball to everybody. Why is the city of L.A. giving him a day? We should be honoring people that have a positive impact and influence in cities with these kind of honors. And I get it. They're just some kind of proclamation from a mayor. But let's honor people that are having an impact. And in a city and a state in California that has so many problems, economic and otherwise, and issues, we're celebrating a guy who at best was basically called one of the worst teammates people have played with, and at worst was an accused rapist. who never was technically cleared because he didn't go to trial. He basically paid somebody off. And I get it. All of this is alleged, but you're celebrating that person with a day. I don't get it. There's better people that you could spend it. And if Phoenix were going to celebrate a day, it'd be January 19th. 1-9 in honor, or excuse me, 1-9, January 9th, 1-9 in honor of Rajah Bell, who clotheslined Kobe Bryant, because that's the kind of thing you should honor with a guy like Kobe.
So you want to honor a guy who clotheslined a guy, right? That's
yes.
What you're saying, absolutely.
Because that's it drives me nuts. Why are we wasting that?
Totally a political ploy.
It is.
You know, I look at something like that, and the mayor, whoever's idea it was, hey, how can I get approval ratings? Let's embrace Kobe Bryant, the biggest celebrity in town. So I got nothing to add to that. I'm right there with you, and happy Kobe Bryant Day to LA.
No.
We're going to enjoy the non-Kobe Bryant Day here in Phoenix.
We need like anti-Kobe Bryant Day, or you know what?
I think it would make more sense to have a Magic Johnson Day.
Magic
Johnson not only did more for the city, he did a lot for really bringing attention to the AIDS and HIV virus after he went through all that.
There is more there to celebrate.
And, you know, if you're going to honor a guy, if you're going to name a day after a guy, and especially a former Laker, I think Magic Johnson needs to be at the top of that list. I don't know. You can't have 32. He didn't wear two numbers, so it's confusing. So I don't know what. Maybe you find the.
March 2nd, 32.
There you go. So on March 2nd should be Magic Johnson Day. That seems to me to be the guy to honor, but I'm not trying to maintain or stay in public office in Los Angeles these days.
Let me, if you're listening to this on Wednesday when we record it, and it is Kobe Bryant Day, Suns fans, get out there and let's troll that hashtag. Let's have some fun with it. You know, Rajah Bell gifts, the series that, you know, the beat him, all those things. Just troll that. Let me get on to another one because I know you have one. Do you not have one? Good. Then I can
go on to
this. This is going straight to
many
of our listeners.
That's why I only limited you to two because I didn't have one.
Okay. Well, good. Well, then I'm going to move on to this next one. It's that time of year where this is a public service announcement
to
everybody.
I'll have a response to this one too.
On social media and in general. I don't care about your fantasy football team.
Why not?
No one cares about your fantasy football team. Now, I play fantasy football. I'm not saying don't play fantasy football. I'm not saying don't enjoy it. Just don't publicly broadcast that X, Y, and Z player on your roster is tanking your day. I don't care. Nobody cares if they're not performing well for, you know, whatever your clever throwing fits or whatever your clever Cardinals theme.
That's my mom's throw to fits.
I don't care, all right? I really just don't care what is going on with your fantasy football team, your complaints about it. What really angers me is when somebody will go on social media and yell at a guy like a Larry Fitzgerald or a David Johnson or any guy that's on their roster when they have a bad week. If you think I don't care about your fantasy football team, the guys you drafted certainly don't care about being on your fantasy football team. So keep your complaints, keep any of your stuff about your fantasy football team off social media. Talk trash with your league. I love that. Have fun with it. Make side bets in your fantasy league. Do that. Make a million trades. That's basically why I'm in fantasy sports, so I can pretend I'm Steve Keim or Ryan McDonough and make all sorts of ridiculous moves. But just don't post it on social media because I couldn't give a crap about it.
So I should X out on my show sheet here the fact that I wanted to talk about the mock draft, the fantasy mock draft that I did in the players I got and what I learned from it.
Do you want me
to include that in this episode?
No, you will be doing the rest of the show by yourself this episode if you talk about a fantasy sports mock draft that you did and running us through who went in what round.
And based on the mock drafts, you know, there's power rankings involved, Espo, and I am climbing the power rankings chart of my fantasy mock draft.
This is the group text guys. You play with them in this league?
One of them is in two of my leagues. The other two are not.
You guys text each other.
But we're in the fantasy baseball league together. Baseball, that's where it's at, my man.
There's nothing worse than fantasy baseball.
That is
so false. You have to change roster.
You are so wrong.
You have
wrong.
To make roster adjustments 160 plus times.
And see, that's false. That is a false statement. That's why you didn't succeed in fantasy baseball, because you did not look ahead to see what's in front of you, to predict the future, and to actually look into the numbers. There is a art to fantasy baseball, Espo, that you clearly have not tapped.
I do not know that art. I color outside the lines and we'll draft guys. Whatever. We're not getting into it, because that's me talking about a fantasy team, which was the whole point of this area of grievance. Yep. We're not talking about that. And if you want to bring it up on the show, you can find a new co-host. That's
okay.
It. That's
all right. You've laid it. You've laid the groundwork. Meanwhile, I'm very excited for my fantasy squads coming up. Got a couple drafts coming up, and I can't wait to talk about the players that I drafted that are going to take me to the promised land.
If we want to do a whole segment on fun fantasy football team names that are Arizona-related, I'm fine with that. That's entertainment.
Okay. Well, then why don't you pose that question? The question on Twitter. Right. We'll read the best names next week.
Yes. Right here, right now, throwing down the gauntlet, AZ Fantasy Names.
Hashtag AZ Fantasy Names.
We want to know what the best fantasy football, fantasy basketball, whatever you want. We can go best team names involving an Arizona angle. That's the kind of stuff that you can talk about in terms of fantasy, because it's entertaining for everyone.
And we'll read the best ones next week.
I can't drop these mics. They're on an arm, and I don't own them. So
that, and you just have to pick it right back up if your voice wants to be heard on this episode.
If you dropped it, you
look like that funny guy, you know, that dropped it but didn't walk away, picked it right back
up. There's like 15 mics in this room. I could drop one of the other ones. I'm pretty sure the Skyview networks would not appreciate me breaking their
equipment. No, they wouldn't. Trade, extend, release. I watched the Arizona Diamondbacks last night give up nine runs to the Atlanta Braves. They've dropped two in a row, watching Freddie Freeman not only beat up on the Diamondbacks again, but also on my fantasy team. I'm playing against him in baseball this week. So just wanted to throw that in there. Trey's walking out. He's across the desk, and he is gone.
I'll come back.
So trade, extend, release, Espo. Tony La Russa, Chip Hale, Dave Stewart. You can trade one, extend one, or release one. And I'm going to go first, because you always go first with this game.
That's because you're a great point guard and you distribute the ball very well.
That's why I love you, my man. Main host
is supposed to do, but I will let you go
but
first.
But I'm going to be a scoring point guard here in this episode.
You can be more Stephon Marbury than Steve Nash this episode. It's fine.
I'm trading Tony La Russa to the Chicago Cubs. I'm trading him, the D-Bat Dog at Chase Field, and our upcoming first-round pick, since we don't seem to care about first-round picks anyway, to the Chicago Cubs for Theo Epstein and a Wrigley dog.
Just one? You'll trade the entire D-back dog franchise
for just one Wrigley dog and Theo Epstein. In all seriousness, Theo Epstein is the model now for two franchises. Granted, the Cubs...
Two cursed franchises,
two cursed ones. One of them has not yet reached the promised land, but is looking pretty darn good. Theo Epstein has the model. He has completely broken it down. He has added immense talent. He has added players that are young, exciting, and extremely talented, adding draft picks, adding top prospects, and building around key pieces like an Anthony Rizzo. The Diamondbacks have done the opposite by having a key piece and trying to throw crazy money, like 2 years ago, throwing crazy money at Cody Ross and Bronson Arroyo and other names. Now this year, Zach Greinke, Shelby Miller, other big names. They have it all wrong. I want to trade for the Theo Epstein model, at least, if I'm going to add someone that's going to be managing my front office. And that leads me to my next one. If I'm trading for Theo Epstein, I'm releasing Dave Stewart.
Okay. I only do the trade you propose if we can include D. Baxter, the Bobcat, because he makes no sense as a mascot for a team that's full of snakes. Now, I get it. It was because the ballpark used to be known as the Bob. Well, it's not known as the Bob anymore.
Wait, is that really why? I never knew that.
D. Baxter, the Bobcat. That's why it's a Bobcat.
Oh, I see you learn something new every day.
Get rid of him in that deal. Now, I'm going to release Tony La Russa, because I feel like, and this is a... If I'm not here next week, you know somebody's taking care of me for saying this, but...
Cut out your knees.
The game has passed Tony La Russa by. Now, maybe he could still manage. I don't know. But in a front office capacity, doing things the old way doesn't work. It's time to release Tony La Russa. And that goes along with what you were saying in terms of, you know, looking at the money ball strategy, the Theo Epstein strategy. You need somebody that's going to look at analytics, that's going to look at the entire system from top to bottom and figure out a way to make it sustainable.
And acquiring young talent, trading young talent.
and a guy in the twilight of his career starting a new position that he's unfamiliar with isn't going to get the job done. Now, I have a great deal of respect for Tony La Russa.
Likewise.
His institutional knowledge, what he did as a manager, all of that.
And his outlook on life and his philosophies on baseball, I totally have respect for.
But it's not working here, and I get it. People say, well, he hasn't had enough time. At some point, you have to realize that the game is moving in a different direction. So I released Tony La Russa. I trade Dave Stewart. Because some people may be looking for bullpen help, and he was a pitcher at one point.
You're right.
So maybe you can get something because of that.
Tis the season for bullpen help.
And nobody's going to pick him up off waivers, so let's try to trade him that way. So that's my rationale with that.
So interestingly enough, the guy that everyone's out for his job is the guy that we're both extending, and that's Chip Hale. Let you go first.
Well, yeah, because... And this is an old Bill Parcells thing, but if you're not letting him shop for the groceries, he ain't going to make you a good dinner with whatever ingredients you're handing him. Like, he's been handed bad ingredients. How do you expect a manager to put together a good season when he's had to deal with what he's had to deal with? And I'm not 100% sure, and I have no knowledge of this, so this is grossly bad of me to speculate like this, but I'm going to do it anyways. I'm not 100% sure that Tony La Russa hasn't weighed in on managerial decisions and said to Chip, well, what about this or that or the other thing? And when you see a coach start to get second-guessed by upper management, that's when you'll see some decisions that don't make sense. I think that Jeff Hornacek probably dealt with some of that, or his predecessor Alvin Gentry. Alvin actually, I know, did deal with some of that. Like, when you see that, you can't be effective. I'm not sure that Chip Hale were seeing the way that he would legitimately want to do it. So I would like to see him get a fresh start under a new group, because he was a guy that everybody looked at as an up-and-coming manager, a guy with up-and-coming managerial potential. And I'd like to see what he could do with a new vision behind him.
And this has been my opinion, and it's still the same way, that you don't jump ship on anyone a year and a half into this. You have to give it some time. There needs to be some structure. And if given the option for the three of them, you need structure in a clubhouse, and it needs to be long-term structure. So I'd like to see Chip Hale, if I have to do one of these three things with these three guys, I'd like to see Chip Hale of the three to be given that structure within the clubhouse to build a team and to build a family and to build camaraderie long-term. You know, it seems like there has seemed like at times that this team has given up on him, but it doesn't look like he's given up on this team. He's still throwing Jake Lamb out there every day. Jake Lamb is in a tough slump right now. Granted, he had two doubles last night against the Braves, but he's still throwing him out there every day. Yosmani Tomas, you can totally tell that they have worked with him and stuck with him despite what everyone is saying. And in the last month, he has the most home runs of anyone in baseball. Shelby Miller is pitching really well in Reno right now. I'm not ready to anoint him as, look, he's turning it around. I'm not there yet. But he's pitching well in a hitter's league in the PCL. Instead of them dealing him away or throwing him away, Chip Hale has been positive with him and has said in the media that he wants to get to the bottom of it and he wants to work through it and find the problems. Now, does he have the coaching staff in place? Maybe not on some of these things. But structure...
Well,
structure,
is that all his decision, too?
And it may not be, it may not be, but structure is key. And I think structure within a clubhouse is important. Sustainability is important. And so I think you keep Chip Hale and extend him in this situation, this game we're playing. With Theo Epstein as a general manager, and I get to watch from the stands with my Wrigley dog.
I feel like when you look at it, what Chip Hale is trying to do with these young guys in a lost season is the way you have to do it. You have to try to build these guys up for the future. And you got to get a guy like a Jake Lamb in the right headspace, a Yosmani Tomas, Shelby Miller. These are all pieces that are likely part of your future based on the way this is built. So you have to figure out a way to work them through it. And I think that's what Chip Hale is good at. He's been what he did down in Tucson with the Tucson Sidewinders and the young talent that they had down there for the Diamondbacks. He helped grow them. You want a guy that can do that here at the major league level with some of this young talent. I think they're doing it the right way.
That's Greg Esposito. I'm Jared Cohen. It's the Dry Heat Check. Tell them, Espo, all the different ways that they could get a hold of hearing us, following us, and riding on this incredible ride with us.
Twitter, at Dry Heat Check. Facebook.com/Dry Heat Check. Go there. Interact with us. We love to do that. iTunes, search Dry Heat Check. Find us. Subscribe to the show. Leave a review. It helps new people find the show. Everything we're seeing, very positive.
Have you given any memorabilia away yet?
I have not. Nobody's taken me up on actually tweeting me a screenshot of their review on iTunes, although those reviews are rolling in, so keep that up. Do the same on Google Play. You can find us there searching Dry Heat Check, Audio Boom, another place that you can find us. And then dryheatcheck.com will take you to our page on sports360az.com, where you can find everything about the show every week.
And now you can drop your mic.
I am done. A pleasure as always.
This has been the Episode 9 Jim McMahon episode of the Dry Heat Check.